and welcome to Writing About Dragons and Shit, a podcast where two authors and a writer get together and talk about the ways that they tell stories. I'm one of your hosts, Trevor Bettis, writer of Idle Champions of the Forgotten Realms and host of Too Many Podcasts. And with me each week are two amazing people who are.
I'm Erin M. Evans. I write fantasy novels. I'm best known for the Books of the Usurper series and the Brimstone Angels saga. And as of today, my new book, RuneScape, The Gift of Guthix, is out. So whether you like RuneScape or just epic fantasy adventures with big old froggy boys, you should check it out.
B. Dave Walters, I got just a ton of appearances this year that are pinned at the top of my Twitter at B. Dave Walters, but I would like to take my time to say that the Get the Guthix is available now. Erin M. Evans just casually out here, just dropping bangers of books all over the place.
And also joining this week, a special guest.
Shauna Germain. Hey! I'm a fiction writer and a game designer, and you can catch me on a previous episode of this fantastic podcast where we talk all about swearing, which is awesome. My recent products include the Old Gods of Appalachia role-playing game, yes, which just won a big award. I'm very excited about that. And the Devil's Dandy Dogs, where you play as dogs trying to get souls for the devil.
Ooh. I actually haven't told you this, Shauna. My sister got me into Old Gods of Appalachia while I was while I was on a road trip. And as I was coming back into my home city, I was like, you know, I think there's a role-playing game of this. And I think there's a game store on my way home. And I pulled off and bought it, and I have been loving it.
Fantastic. That's so lovely. Thank you.
So good. But yeah, so we just recorded a book club episode with Shauna talking about Morning Glory. So I know a few folks who are listening to that book club who aren't reading the book. So hey, shout out to you who's also listening to this. But we're here to continue doing some listener questions. We're actually getting close to the end on these. We've almost caught up. Took us 5 months.
So keep sending them in, dear listener.
It's true. It's true. We could keep going with these if we keep getting more. So, you know, just saying. But Erin is going to be reading these questions for us today. Get on into it.
Okay. I greet thee, heads of the Tangerino Empire. I am V. A loyal squire of our all-powerful army that seeks the guidance of our all-knowing rulers.
Oh my God.
I am currently writing a personal favorite book that centers around street fighting. At first, my background in martial arts and combat sports would make this a breeze, but it's quite the contrary. Mm. I visualize the fights play-by-play, but YouTube has told me that play-by-play narrations don't make for fights that are good to read. So here's my question. How does one portray a violent back and forth fight between normal humans in a way that is vivid and exciting for the reader while respecting the skill level of the fighters involved? I feel like I'm pretty close to cracking the code, and hearing what you have to say should be able to give the light bulb over my head the jolt of electricity it needs to shine. Thanks for your help in advance. P.S. I really like your podcast. You're doing a great job, and I appreciate you for being such an entertaining group and making my commute actively enjoyable. Keep going strong.
Oh, thank you.
My brother in Christ. I am with you on this unique pain. It is true. A step by step is not interesting to read, because quite frankly, if you don't know all of the individual components described, it doesn't mean anything. It's meaningless. And if you do understand them all, you don't need it. I actually highly recommend not just paying attention to how other people do it in their writing, but specifically the Bourne Identity novel, the original Robert Ludlum Bourne Identity novel. Yes. Read how Jason Bourne just breaking people down is described. Second to that is the Jack Reacher novels. I think Killing Floor is the first one. See how it is described what Jack Reacher is doing to people. The reason why I say that is both of those books have action sequences that are describing breaking down minions and action sequences describing serious combat with an equally matched opponent. The most important thing is the less is more. You can also describe the damage that they're doing as a way to really getting across, like, you know, smashes into him with a thunderous blow that sends him crashing to the ground, is better than he weaves left hook to the body, right uppercut, you know. Yeah, it's rough though, because in your head it looks so cool and you want the audience to see exactly what you see, and they're not gonna, they just need to know that the person who that you want to win is winning.
This is one of the nerdiest things I will probably say this episode. Writing Star Wars fan fiction and lightsaber fights taught me this. Because I was like, oh yeah, I'll describe every move that's in it because lightsaber fights are so cool. And then I wrote it and I read it. And this is fucking terrible. Mm-hmm. This is boring as shit. And then I read actual good fight scenes and I'm like, oh, okay, so yeah. The description of what's happening moment to moment is far less important than like the big things that are happening in it. Like you can literally just kind of describe the fight and just like he blocked several blows, you know, and like just with that as half of a sentence. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to have a play-by-play of where those blows came from or what block he was using or anything like that. It is more about the intensity of what is happening there. Honestly, some of my favorite fight scenes are the ones that just suddenly kind of go into shorter sentences because it is kind of more intense, where like things are happening quicker, you're reading faster, and so things are kind of more in the moment for it. But yeah, I cannot recommend, or I cannot tell you enough. Don't do play by play. Please don't do that in your fight scenes.
I will say this last thing and then I'm gonna stop talking because I know Aaron and Sean have thoughts on this. Bob Salvatore said he describes the combat sequences like dances and he does it on purpose. He has specific dancing styles in mind for how the people actually fight. And he describes it according to that.
You know, fight scenes are not my forte, which is funny because sex scenes are my forte. And I have been on 1,000 panels where people have asked the question of, are fight scenes and sex scenes the same to write? And my answer is, in some ways, yes, and in some ways, absolutely not, except that I do write them the same. And here's what I mean by that, is that my answer to fight scenes is always, what's on the body? Because this is often true because I write a lot of first person, I write a lot of close in perspective. And so I don't write quite as distant. And so for me, it's like, what's on the body? Where are things landing on the body? Where does the body hurt? What does the body feel? What is the body doing? And in that way, I'm able to stay closer to the impact of the things that are happening, as opposed to the sort of distance of the choreography or the dance or the elegance. Because I think that like, there is this space of like the real impact of those emotional connections with other human beings, whether it's fighting or fucking or having conversation, are the ways in which they impact us physically. And so I try to stick with that, particularly because I don't know anything about fighting and I've only been like in one fight in my whole life.
Yeah, I think that's my biggest point. Like your average reader is going to be more connected to the emotional state of your fighter than the choreography of the fight. Mm-hmm. And so if you can really anchor that, they will go along with a lot of that choreography as the sort of embroidery on it. Mm-hmm. But how angry are they? How afraid are they? What is it doing inside of them? How does it, you know, change the way that, like, you know, when you're mad enough that you can get punched and you don't really care that your face is now bleeding, right? That's something I've never had that experience. I have been mad enough where that might be true, but I was not also hit in the face. So, but I can imagine it, right? This is putting together something I know with something I don't know. And I would say the other thing that will help carry you through a fight scene, in my experience, once you get into a fight, that is frequently works best when nothing else can happen here. We must fight because that's the only way through this. And that doesn't mean that you can't be the instigator, but it has to mean that you're doing this because what's on the other side you really want. The stakes are clear once we go into a fight. I have known people who are very fond of writing fight scenes. I have seen sort of beginning writers who really like writing fight scenes that tend to fall into the sort of play-by-play, let me show you what I know about fencing or what I know about boxing or all these things. And the fights sometimes come on just because something needs to go on this page.
Yeah.
Right. Somebody throws down a challenge. And so we have a fight. And it's like, but I already knew that this character was someone for whom pride was the defining feature. I didn't learn that from this fight. So we don't actually need it. And I don't know, maybe there are books that are like fight erotica where you can do that. Like where people are going in because they are like, ooh, did you see that riposte? Yeah. But I don't know what that is.
There probably are.
So those are things. Remember the emotions and remember the beat. Like that something has to be like changed. There needs to be like micro stakes in there. Something has to come out of it. And if you can do that, then the people who are like, I don't know anything about fighting, will go along with you on it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and the closest thing I know of to the fighter porn, because I'm like, go on, even as you say, is how some of the lit RPG stuff that makes story more game based, I know, can get a little more granular. But even then, it's more like naming the moves.
Yeah.
You know, then.
Well, again, this person wrote in saying that they're writing about street fights. I mean, you get some good old Street Fighter words in there. Get some sonic booms. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're fighting in USSR. You know?
One of the books that I recommend for fight scenes is a totally weird one, but it's All the Windrex Stars by Elizabeth Baer, because one of the main characters is a boxer. And the way that she uses the fight scenes, every single fight scene that's in there, even though he is a boxer by trade, like is vital to him and his growth and the story and the other main character's growth. And like, it's just brilliant, brilliant stuff. And they're mostly very quick and not even super detailed, but they're so incredibly powerful.
Thank you.
I just also have to say, Dave, I have not read The Bourne Identity in forever, and I completely forgot about it, and now it's like all flooding back, and the ways it's so different from the movie.
I just bought it on Kindle. I'm like, okay, I'm intrigued. I want to read this.
All right, ready for the next one?
Yeah. Yep.
It's a multi-question one. Dear Tangerino Troika, have any of you ever considered writing under a pseudonym? I answer that one first.
Oh, that's right. This is the rapid fire one.
Yeah, three of them. Yes, but I haven't. I don't love my name, but also it's my fucking name.
Yeah,
so
that's,
I'm in a weird spot.
That's kind of where I was. Like, I thought about if I ever got published and stuff, like maybe doing this, doing that. But like, yeah, it's my name. Like, I want to see my name on a fucking book.
Is something I'm not willing to stand on. I'm not gonna write, you know. I get sometimes, especially in the past,
yeah,
some people might have gotten typecast to such an extent that Stephen King had to be Richard Bachman because nobody would ever let him tell a different kind of story. Yeah. But it's less that now. It's not that it's not that now. It's less that now. Although my biggest lol ever is when J.K. Rowling tried to write under the pseudonym to prove that she could sell books, and then she couldn't, and she was like, psych, it's me, J.K. Rowling, and then the books.
Better yet, she wrote under a man's name. Yep.
I have never either. I think that, but particularly when I came out, because I started as an erotica writer, everyone was telling me that I had to write under a pseudonym. And I'm very much like the kind of person who, if you tell me I have to do something, I will just throw both of my middle fingers in the air and never look back. But also, I think sort of like what B. Dave was saying, like I want to normalize writing in a whole bunch of different genres. I want to be proud of what I write. I want to write all the things. And if I'm going to write books about sex or whatever that people are going to pay for, like, I feel like I should step up and be me. And this came up again when I started working on kids games, because people were like, oh, you've written all this porn stuff and you're going to write kid games. And it was sort of like, well, those two things are connected for many people. We go from one to the other. But I also sort of just wanted to normalize like being a whole entire person and having all of these interests and genres and categories that you can write in and not sort of dividing myself into little slices.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point. The people I know who you use who write under pseudonyms often do it because they had a part of their career that didn't go quite like they wanted. So that's another thing that sometimes you see, which I have not had to consider.
Yeah.
I hope I don't. Okay, yeah, what did you...
Oh, sorry,
go ahead.
I was going to say there's lots of safety reasons that people do consider pen names, yeah. Right? Yeah. Like if they have kids or if they have, you know, exes or like there's lots of reasons that like it's a totally valid choice, right?
I will say I actually do know someone else who her name is just kind of unpronounceable. Mm. So she has a different name that she uses. Marie Brennan's real name is she also writes with another author and they are M.A. Carrick as one. So that's another thing. If you want to write with, was it James S.A. Corey? It's actually two dudes.
Yep.
So yeah, lots of reasons, but none of us have them. All right. What did you spend your first writing advance on? How about a sparkly necklace?
Hell yeah.
I bought a pair of Fry boots that hurt my feet in the end. And I was very sad.
Oh, I think you're muted, B. Dave.
I was coughing, sorry.
It's okay.
I think I just went out drinking. but what I will say is when what I do is less than collect things, I take screenshots of the bank statement. Like I have where Disney paid me, I have where Netflix paid me. I'm like, that's a thing that happened.
Hell yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
For real.
I was terrible when I got the writing job at CNE. I was so frazzled at everything, I didn't even celebrate it because I just completely forgot. So I'm going to count when I got the advance for doing Champions of Lore, which was to buy this computer that I am currently recording this on that I did all of Champions of Lore with. So, hey. Which led to that job. So, you know. What's the next one?
The next one. Have you ever ego surfed, i.e. Googled yourself? Thanks for a great podcast, Jeremy E. Grinmeyer.
Wait, are there people that don't?
I know, right?
I do this.
Right? I'm not going to lie. I'm having a bad day. I do this. And I have, honestly, it feels weird because there's sometimes I will encounter people who are loving my stuff and I will sort of like pop up and be like, hi, hello. And I'm always like, I think I'm probably being a big old weirdo, but they have all, everybody I've done this to has reassured me that it like made their day. But like this one I love. So I found this Tumblr post of someone reading Empire of Exiles, and in the notes, it's like all this, like you can't see it.
Oh yeah.
But the notes are all like, just, I don't know, just nice stuff. And they're like, where's the crazy fandom for this? I'm obsessed. And it just cheered me up. So we were talking before about putting things that remind you of your successes near where you're writing, right? So like, we were talking about like Rhiannon got nominated for a short story award. And I was like, put that by your computer and look at it every day, right? I'm like, here's my scribe award. And here's this thing that made me happy in this picture frame I like that I don't have anything that fits inside. I'm printing it out. And then I was like, I should show that to them. So I pick a picture of it and I dropped it in their Tumblr thing. And yeah, they were a little surprised. But they were
so cool.
So yeah, that's what happens when I ego surf. I call it vanity Googling, but
yeah.
I have a lot less hits, but I've 100% done it.
I will say I almost never read the comments though. You know, like I'm deep enough in the game that I'm like, nah. I've curated my spaces where I know to find the people whose opinions I value.
Can I like skim like okay?
Oh wow! Sorry, I was just like, you know what? Screw it. I'm gonna type my name into Google right now. I forgot about a podcast that I guested on one time that it brought up.
Dude, it never failed. Like between Googling myself and going on IMDb, I see so many things that I'm like, oh, I did do that. Oh, whoa!
Oh, this is now my favorite thing. I'm actually gonna take a screenshot of this. There's images that came up with my search, and one of them, even though it cites me, is B-Dave.
They don't see race, Trevor. I should be so blessed to be mistaken for the hunkiest podcast producer.
Oh, thank you. Trevor Betts. But yeah.
Now there's a me hiding in there somewhere.
Yep.
Beautiful.
Sean, you done this?
Yeah, you know, I go through streaks, and I was just laughing because I was thinking about the last time I Googled myself was after B Dave actually shared our consent form. And boy, does that bring all the boys to the yard in angry swarms, because holy crap. All of my Google feed, it's like you won an award and you published a thing, and then there's 70,000 men who are yelling at me because I suggested that consent was a good idea. So I do go through streaks, although they kind of make me laugh, right? You don't have to worry too much about them, but that was my last Google. It was a couple weeks ago, and that's what happened.
Dear listener, if you don't know, this was on the Tweetagrams, and Shauna and the good people at Monte Cook Games have put out a very wonderful consent and RPGs form where you can just say the kind of thing that you are comfortable or uncomfortable with at your table. Super painless, takes 30 seconds. A mutual of mine, April, had posted it, and of course the chads came out, and then I posted that if a man specifically, but a person at all, ever gives you a hard time about consent in any context, run away from that person. And of course some of the chads try it for me, but I will make time for them, so I'm just out here stealing souls, and Jana comes over the top and it's like, yeah, we made this. Here's where you can get it. Because what I published was a picture. And apparently they tried it with her too. You know, I wish you'd mentioned something at the time, because I know you can fight your own fights. I know you can. But I enjoy it. Like, it is a passion of mine.
Dunk on chads. It renews every 6 months or so. I'll just tag you in for the next one.
Let me know.
You make a fight scene.
Yes, man.
Love it.
Mm-hmm. All right, ready for the next one?
Yep.
Yes.
All right. Hello, tangent management. I like that one. I'm Glenn, one of your minimum wage workers here. Oh. And I had a question/musing that I'd love to hear your thoughts on. I'm on the 7th page of my prologue for an epic fantasy story. It's not a lot, but thanks to you all, I finally got out of world-building sickness. It's crazy how much easier it gets to write once you just start doing it. Y'all Heck were yeah. right about that, too. I'm so glad. Anyway, one of the things that made me feel like my idea was good for a story was how, while brainstorming, things just started to fall into place together. Like, I'd have an idea for a magic system around colors, and when trying to think of how they work together, ideas would just fall into place, and as they grew, they started to support each other naturally. This was extremely validating. It was part of why I loved world building more and more. I was curious if you guys have had this happen with ideas, or what it is for you that validates an idea, makes you think, okay, this is actually working, or yes, it's all coming together. There is always the third option that this is just what building a story is, and I got lucky with feeling it all makes sense, but that is more embarrassing revelation mid-email and less engaging conversation starter. You all talk about doing different amounts and types of research for your writing, and I'm curious if that happens for you in research, where you find something unexpected and it just fits perfectly into your current idea or plan, so you just have to add it. Your podcast has been a lot of work to dedicate my minimum wage life to, but this has been the most fun and helpful part of my week. Thanks for taking the time to do this pod and for sharing your wonderful personalities and every tangential thought. You're giving valuable time and experience, and that generosity is helping us listeners actually become writers. It's inspiring, slightly insane, and shuns capitalism, but I can't thank you. Okay, time to clock back in. Glenn with one N. P.S. If you make shirts, capitalism is back on the table.
I like it.
All right. So I feel like this is I don't know which one of us you're gesturing at. So
I know, that's why I was just like, B-Dave gesturing, I'm just like, I don't know who he's gesturing to.
Anybody. Okay, so I think this is sort of what it feels like to do the haystack story, right? That things sort of just start kind of clicking. And then, you know, it's really jarring when they don't. But I do think that that is a big part of it, that things come together, that you start making connections. And building patterns off of things. And that is a lot. That is to get real technical and outside of the actual, you know, artistry of it. That's fundamentally a lot of writing, right? Is making patterns that pull people along and tickle the part of their brain that makes them feel a particular emotion. That's the job, right? So that is a great feeling though, when you're like, ah, that. And that is definitely the difference between a story that's working and clicking along and one that is not quite cooked. I definitely have ideas in the hopper where I'm like, here's the setup and here's how this happens. And then for some reason, they do this thing. And again, the flip side of that is you're writing along and then suddenly you're like, fuck. Mm-hmm. Why does this happen? This doesn't click anymore. And you kind of just have to like relax and get back into that clicky space. But yeah, that's my answer.
What about you, Sean?
Yeah, I feel like my, like this question has so much to do with sort of my personal style of writing, which is that like I gather things like a magpie and I put them all in this little nest and it builds a thing. But what's really important isn't the items that I brought or the nest. It's the places in between. It's like the little, it's like that when you put two objects together, there is something that happens between the two of them that is wholly new and is almost like this liminal space of idea or something that's really fascinating. And so like when I've gathered all the right pieces together, it isn't about what those pieces build. It's about what the spaces in between them are sort of becoming. And that's when I get those goosebumps, because it's like, oh, here's these two concepts that shouldn't go together or have never been put together that I know of or whatever. And it's forming something in there that is exciting and new. And so then I start adding more. And then eventually like the pieces that you've added kind of fall away because the spaces in between become their own ideas and grow and grow. But for me, it's very much that like aha moment, that goosebump moment. And in fact, like Erin sometimes sends me ideas as she's working on them. And like, I can tell the difference in her goosebump moments when like, she's like, oh, how does this feel? And then like, she'll land on something and I'll get shivers. I'll just be like, yes, that feels right in this kind of cool and interesting way. So I love that. Like it's a thing that you can do as a creative, but also as someone who's experiencing creativity. And I think that's really cool and good practice.
Mm-hmm. I think definitely for me, it's like, when I've reached a certain level of hype for myself, like, you know, like, cause I like the stories that I tell, but I'm me, that may not be true for everyone else with every idea that I have. But when I'm thinking about stories and building onto them, and I'm starting to see the bigger story that can be told there, the range of characters that could tell that story and what that story could mean, really is there's a level of hype that I start getting there where I'm like, oh yeah, no, I fucking want to see this. I want to see this so bad, I'm gonna fucking make it. And that's usually when I will start like actually sitting down and working things out and seeing if they play out. They don't always do. I mean, but that's kind of when I hit that point is when I will give it the shot on like in Scrivener or something and see if it has anything to if it has any legs to it. But with research, I mean, also, yeah, like there's definitely times where I've been researching something for a book and be like, oh shit, that's a really cool thing for another thing later. It goes back to like the haystack thing that Aaron's talking about, like that I'm gonna take that, I'm gonna put that back there to put on top of something later. This is not working for what I'm working on right now, but I think that is cool and I'm excited about that, but that's for something else.
I, as you all know, spend so much time in the planning and concepting phase that I don't put fingers to the keyboard unless I already know a thing is going to work.
Mm-hmm.
But I think two experiences I've had that are especially pleasurable is one, when my own characters can surprise me, when they can say something that I didn't think of, essentially. And I'm like, oh, Oh yeah, in its own way, it's like it's not me talking, it's them. Because then they've come to life, and that I love. The other thing is I unintentionally created a shared universe. Because like Shauna, I create I have a document where again I'll just have like word prompts, and I'll have things that are interesting concepts, but not enough to tell a whole entire story, like a world where nobody sleeps. You know, like okay. You know, like that's not innately a premise, but you know, that is an interesting part of something. And sometimes I just assemble those things. And I had my various stories that I was picking at, and I was like, oh, here's how this could hook together. Actually, here's how basic, like everything I've ever done could hook together. That was interesting. I literally wrote, by Jove, I think I've got it in like 24-point font and cap in bold.
I love it.
Oh, yeah.
All right, next one.
Yeah.
Doing okay? All right. Greetings, esteemed triumvirate of literary shenanigans. I've been grappling with a writing dilemma. When it comes to unveiling character motivations and other details in a novel, do you find it best to lay it all out on the table, or do you prefer to leave a bit of mystery in the air, letting readers concoct their own theories? I'm particularly stumped with my main villain's motivations and actions. Should I force feed the reader with explanations or let them speculate? For example, my big bad has allied themselves with a blood cult and takes part in occult rituals. Am I to explain the intricacies of said ritual, how it works, why they do it the way they do, and why it is the path they have chosen? Or can I get away with basically saying, because evil peeps do evil magic, okay? What's your take on balancing clarity and intrigue? If there has been an episode on this, please point this out. I'm still catching up. Thanks in advance, Simon.
If similar to the person that said they had to get off the horse of world building, I've said before, and I will say again, because I don't expect you to have heard our voluminous amount of content, dear listeners, although you should go back and listen. We will bless you. If only, I mean, Aaron's objectively brilliant. Nobody cares about your 15,000 years of backstory. Similarly, if the method by which Blood for the Blood God is important, sure, say it. Otherwise, we get Blood for the Blood God is bad. Okay. You know, like, don't take my blood. I'm doing stuff with it.
Don't take my blood.
Not my blood.
I use that.
Like,
That's why she should have gone to the vampire blood restaurant. Okay, sorry.
Exactly. That's listen to the book club reference. Listen to the book club. Listen to the book club. I have a buddy of mine that I used to try and work with. I don't work with him anymore because his whole thing was we were working on a horror story, and he's like, you must introduce every possible thing they could do to address why they didn't do it.
No.
Right? That it's like, well, they could go, they could try and make a run for the car, they could try and make a run for the basement, right? So you need to say, well, we could go to the car, but if we do that, he might catch us. But we could go to the basement, but if we do that, we'll be trapped. And I'm like, no, bro, you don't. Unless there is a glaring obvious thing, and this is true in any story that is set in the modern day, because the presumption is they have a cell phone.
Yeah.
And if they have a cell phone, they can call for help. So if you never, ever address why didn't somebody just call the cops, that's probably a hole that you should say something about. But for the most part, especially if you're dealing with magic, it can work because reasons. It just needs to be consistent reasons.
Yeah.
Like if you've been saying in this book the entire time, magic only light works in direct sunlight, and suddenly the cultists are, you know, performing a ritual in the dead of night in a cave, unless the plot is how can they be performing the ritual in the cave? That's not possible. Otherwise, it doesn't matter. Like magic, yo.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think about it like the things that my antagonist or my villain need to present are the things that are only in direct relationship to the main character, the hero, or the antagonist. And so if it impacts the protagonist in some way, so there's this point of contention, and I don't mean like literally, but on a more sort of philosophical or thematic level, then you want to include it. And so like if the blood cult details are important because it triggers or pings or has something to do with the way that the hero sees the world, then I say, bring it on, right? But if it doesn't have that conflict between what the hero wants and what the villain wants, then it doesn't matter anywhere near as much. And so like a lot of times, if I have a detail that I really love and want to put in there, I will then figure out how to make the main character give a shit about it or be up against it somehow so that I can include it in there. So I feel like it's very much this relationship question when it comes to world building, especially for villain versus hero spaces.
Yeah, I fully agree. Like that, you know, is it a detail that's in there for the purpose of evil peeps do evil magic? Or is it there because it is something that is tempting to your hero that would solve their problem? Or is it something that is antithetical? Does it matter what the mechanism is, right? And it's sort of like, you know, the things that don't matter but require detail, often you can get away with figuring out something simpler. But if that's in there for a reason, I liked your point. Like if there's something you really want, you have to make it work. My random example, in Brimstone Angels, Frida and Havilar's father is a dragonborn. And the reason was the D&D game that started this idea, the character I played had been adopted by a village of dragonborn, and I thought that was fun. Mm-hmm. And that's it. I thought it was a fun detail. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, to make this work, I'm going to have to pare it down a lot. It's one dragonborn. And here's the reason that he does this. And here's the backstory. And here's why that matters. And here's how that impacts them. And now this is a lot about how the characters function. And that's really the kicker, is like, if you want to include something that's a weird detail, make it matter. And if you want to include something that doesn't really need explanation, don't bother explaining it.
Yeah.
Shout out to Mahan, the best dad.
Best dad. There's a whole skin that says so.
You know, I would just say this one last thing. Yeah. This comes up a lot, especially with a vampire and Vampire the Masquerade, that it's like with anything that is magic, anything that is in sci-fi, that is the hardest sci-fi, if you scratch far enough, the answer is because reasons.
Yeah.
Like the logic only goes so far because these things aren't true. So, you know, to what extent you want to dive off that cliff. Yeah. Based on the way that you presented the story, I feel like you don't want to. Or the way you answered the question, rather. So, well,
but yeah. Like using the example that they gave, like, if there's something about the villain's motivation that you do want to reveal, mm-hmm. you could use the blood rituals as a way to do that. Of like, mm-hmm. if they talk to the main protagonist or something, is like, do you know what they do here? Do you know how this works? I don't enjoy this. I don't want to do this, but this is a means to my own ends. And mm-hmm. I will do it to make sure they happen. Like, you can tie those in together if you feel they are important enough to talk about, if they are important enough to the story to do.
Boy, I love it. I could have done this ritual with half the blood.
These amateurs over here, you know how much blood they're wasting?
Yeah. Works better when they're scared.
Yeah. Monsters, Inc. rules. Anyone else got anything on that one? Next question.
This one. Okay. Hi, I have two questions. First question on parenting and being a writer. Do you have any parenting tips for someone who wants to publish and has kids? I'll have two children under the age of two come July this year. I fear I will lose my passion for writing and making art due to meeting their demanding daily needs. I also don't want to be like Coraline's dad, ignoring her needs to pursue his writing career, you know, sitting at the PC while my kid's screaming for attention. Where's a good middle ground? I want to publish traditionally, yet I want to be mindful of my children's psychological, emotional, mental, and physical needs. Any books or resources you can think of will help me? I'm desperate. I feel bad because I had a project where I was working with another writer, Kate Alice Marshall, called Book Versus Baby. And this was kind of our goal, was talking to parents who are writers. And then my kid turned out to have a lot of additional needs. And I said, Kate, I can't do this. So that's one thing. You will probably have to kind of get focused, because it is a lot. Parenting is a lot. I'm sure you've already discovered. And writing is a lot. But that doesn't mean you can't do it. So one thing I will say right out front, I think, and this is, I'm going to get on my soapbox for a minute. I think society tells mothers that they need to be 100% available to their kids all the time and basically sacrifice everything about themselves for their kids. And fathers may also get this message. I don't hear that part. I hear the part that's pointed at me, but it's bullshit. You taking care of yourself is setting a good example for them. It is saying that you are valuable. It is saying that the women who come into their lives are valuable, whole people. And it is an important part of their emotional, psychological, and mental development. So please do not neglect that. Because you can get the message a lot that it is best for them if you turn yourself into just the dispenser of love and need and needs, right? You just focus 100% on them, and it's not actually, it's not good for them. That doesn't mean you need to just, you know, tie them to the TV so you can get your shit done. The nice thing about the little ones, they take naps. Definitely embrace the nap time, writing time. What I did when my kids were small was I really leaned into building a ritual. So when I write, I drink this tea, I use this hand lotion, I play this playlist, right? And so all these things say writing time is now, because what you have in those moments often is like time confetti. You get, you know, the kid's going to sleep for at least 30 minutes. So you don't get the warm-up time that you get pre-kids, or frankly, once they're in school. You got to hit the ground running. So that's one. Having someone else who can watch your kids is very handy. I know not everybody has this option, but especially if you have other parents that are trying to do creative things, and you can do a swap, like I'll watch your kids for a little bit, you watch mine. That's really helpful. I've done that before, like especially once they get old enough that they're okay having a play date, right? And little ones, you can't, but they'll be excited to do that. Play dates are great. And you know, my kids had an early bedtime for a long time. That's what worked for them. It did mean they woke up really still. I don't know. They're morning people, and I don't know how that happened, and I'm not okay with it, but it's how things are. But I had friends whose kids, they just were like, oh, they don't want to go to sleep until like 10. And honestly, I think there is, you know, sleep is a complex thing. So, whatever you need to do to get your kids to sleep, I support. Besides, you know, smothering them a little bit. I know it's tempting, but don't do it. It's not a good idea. but making them go to bed early so you have some adult time to do what you want to do, very, very important. And to that point, like, there's a lot of stuff around the house. I hope your partner is also doing that stuff around the house, because, you know, the laundry and the dishes and all this stuff doesn't go away. But it needs to be something that everybody's got a hand in, or nobody gets to have that time to do stuff. So this is the short version. Like, it is going to be tough for a couple of years here, but it's not going to be taken away. Like, you're not lost. I wrote a lot of books after my first son was born. My first son was born the week Brimstone Angels came out.
But so you were actually pregnant writing a lot of stuff too. I know you've said before. Yeah.
Yes. And writing pregnant, I'm sure you've discovered, is kind of weird. There's things I didn't remember writing. Well, actually, no, I was between pregnancy and that first couple months when they don't sleep. It was like my Cujo. I didn't remember writing Lesser Evils. I was like, wow, this is pretty good. So, you know, like, you can do it. You can do it. But it does sort of take a little bit of discipline. And it does take, you know, reminding yourself you want to do this, because I mean, the other part is, like, you still need to take care of you. You need to sleep and shower and feed yourself and all the important things that keep your body functioning. But that sort of, and you will need to do the things that let your brain relax too, because frankly, writing is still taxing. It's just taxing a thing that you don't really, kids are wonderful, but they can be real boring sometimes. So, like, make sure you're taking care of yourself while you're doing this, but being disciplined about, like, I have 30 minutes and what I want to do is work on my book. And I'm going to take these steps to make sure that I focus and work on my book. Highly, highly recommend it. Okay, sorry, I'm off my soapbox.
Oh, no, that was great. It's a good thing nodding isn't audible, because like that, there would have been a lot of that from the rest of us while you were talking.
That would be so weird if you're just like dinga 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 dinga,
like a cat with a bell.
I'll just add a tiny bit to that. I of course agree with everything that Aaron just said. Obviously being a dad is slightly different, but I was primary caregiver for both of them, so I did my time. That's the joy of working from home. The pressure of a dad to be there all the time is absolutely not the same as it is for a mom. You only get the deadbeat dad if you're not there at all. I will just say, you get that, like, people that are like, I'm babysitting my kids. It's like, no, you're not. That's called parenting. You're raising your children, champ. That's part of the team. For me, I have so many pictures of both of mine just sitting cradled in my left arm, like a little football. And I'm just sitting there writing, you know what I mean? And that's what I just stick them right there and do my thing.
Those front carriers are great. Yep. Just like, you do have to kind of learn to type around them.
Yep.
But
got long arms. I will just say this one thing, especially for those of you that may not have kids and are perhaps considering it. For my money, having kids really only costs you one thing, despite the fact they are catastrophically expensive. You really only truly give up one thing, and that is spontaneity. Like, my single friends can be like, let's go to Vegas tonight. We can be back into by work tomorrow, you know? For me, it's like, let's go to Vegas in August? I mean, you know, like, mine are a little older now. But that's it. Things take more planning. So the only thing I'm going to add to this is a couple things. Is, as we've said so many times, just do something. Get a word, a sentence, a paragraph. Don't stress yourself. The nap thing is great. Neither of mine were nappers. They just wouldn't do it. So that was not in the cards for me. So it may well be after the kid goes to bed for the night, maybe you have something worked out with your partner that you're just like, man, I just need 15 minutes. Just give me, and you have yours. This is when you go play video games. Yeah. I'm going to write, you know what I mean? We're going to reconvene at 10 o'clock and be adults and whatever that means. go easy on yourself. No pressure. Having kids won't cost you anything. If you don't hit your word count, it is not a problem. But look at this like another form of self-care, like eating, like bathing, like everything, because your soul expression is valuable and you will be a more whole and complete human. And that means you will have more to give to your kids. And that is a good thing. So don't stress about it. It's going to suck. You just won't get as much done as some people, which is all right. It's okay. The world will keep turning.
I posted, if you're out on the Discord, join the Discord, but I posted this article that I read recently, this essay about basically run your own race, right? And say, fuck them. When it's, you know, when you see people like doing something better or like picking at your work or whatever, fuck them. It was very inspiring. I loved it. So that is a big one.
I will just say it. I'm not gonna give the details. I love hearing you say things like that, especially after all this time. And I'm not gonna go into details because
I need to repeat it, right? Because I have this problem bad.
I'm not gonna go into details. I don't want to embarrass Erin, but she dunked on a hater recently, and she's like, I heard your voice in my head, and I'm like, yes, good.
B-Day moved through me.
Good.
Yes. I feel like I joked. I was like, my 10th book. So The Gift of Goofix is my 10th published novel.
Hell yeah.
And I was like, I feel like I should be able to like trade this punch card in for reduced imposter syndrome. And I feel a little bit like I did, because a lot of things have shifted in this case.
Hooray.
I have no advice to give on this, so I will just say something motivational. I believe in you, and I'm giving you two thumbs up.
You're getting both barrels.
Yeah.
I think you guys might be able to handle the second part of this quite nicely, though. Mm. I think. Mm. Writing posture. I need an ADHD-friendly chair that I can move around in while writing. I'm a cross-leg fan, and I fidget. Have any of you found ways around this? Did you take courses on prep or typing posture, or just figure it out? I'm struggling physically at a desk, and I end up as a floor person, but I can't keep damaging my body for the writing grind forever. Sincerely, Morgan. And then I think it might have cut something off of the PS.
Oh, did I?
Well, it just, it's very ominous if you didn't.
Oh.
It says, P.S. I don't want to end up like them.
Oh, sorry. They included a picture. It was, it was a picture of Mr. Incredible in his dead-end office job, and then the dad from Coraline just looking defeated at his computer. Sorry about that. That is very ominous otherwise.
I was like, I don't know what this means, and I hope you're okay, Morgan.
Yep. To answer this, I'm literally sitting here right now cross-legged in my chair, and I have been for the majority of this episode. It is one of those things that I
could cross legs in my chair.
I'm very weird with sitting when I in high school. Let's see. You know what? Here we go.
This isn't good.
I'm a 35-year-old man that is about to try something. In high school, I used to. Oh my God! I can't still do it. I would just sit with my leg up on my desk in the school.
I like that a lot.
And it was the most comfortable thing. Holy shit, this is actually really comfortable, and I might do this more often now, except for the fact that my foot's on my desk, and I don't like that. But I have a chair that B. Dave recommended. It is a Secret Labs chair. It is the best chair I've ever had in my life. But the thing is, I have seen on Instagram this like ADHD chair where it's got like this swivel like footrest that can come around, and it's specifically for sitting cross-legged. And I'm like, that looks like my fucking dream. But also, it has no back support, and I have arthritis in the small of my back, and I would die. So it's a balancing thing of that, of just finding the position that does not leave you hurting from writing. When I do write, most of the time I am in a more reasonable sitting position because I'm going to be here for a bit of time. I got my wrist rest and everything like that because I have messed up my body just sitting here writing like a weird goblin, like that guy in the South Park Warcraft episode, like just kind of leaned over and just breaking my arm because I think it's comfortable. So yeah, but do what you do, what doesn't hurt you.
I'm laughing as I'm sitting here swiveling in my chair too. this is sort of not entirely what you asked, but as someone with a neurospicy brain and a need to move, I have come up with some techniques. One of them is a treadmill desk, which I love and keeps my body doing the thing. I go very slow because I cannot type and go fast, and I cannot think and go fast, but it does help in that way. I also am across, like, you know, being both bi and as a neurospicy brain means I don't know how to fucking sit in a chair.
Don't call me out like that, life. Shauna. I already gave a good description of myself, goddammit.
You know, my legs all, you know. But I did retrain myself to sit at my desk like a normal human being because I also have a bad back. And so what I did was I bought a footrest and I bought these like foot rollers that have like little stimulating like bead things on them. And so I can get some of that energy out while, and it reminds me to stay in a normal position for my body because my feet are kind of on the floor and like, I need to have my feet off the floor. That's a thing. And so anything I can do to keep my feet off the floor, but keep myself sort of in a neutral position is really helpful. And the other thing is like, I do think like having a chair that swivels in a bunch of different ways. Like if you play with your armrest, if you need to like swivel the back part, right? Like I feel like investing in a good chair is just such a winner.
You did remind me there, I got a standing desk last year, and that has been really nice when I'm super fucking fidgety, because I can literally stand, I can stand here like looking, like if I was on camera, I'd look like a normal person. Below the desk, my legs are just fucking going everywhere.
Trevor, have I showed you this thing I have?
Oh, you mean this? You mean this thing that I have a sock on for some reason? Yeah. Oh, these balance boards are fantastic.
I want one.
It's so good for when you're like,
I
also have a convertible desk.
So for folks that don't know, like what I have is essentially it's a skateboard that has like these like half spheres on the bottom of rubber that you balance on. And I saw that, I'm like, that looks real cool. I can fidget on that. And I got on the first time, and I thought I was going to die. I thought I was just going to fall straight through this fucking window. Oh. But it's great. I love it.
Mine also has this like squishy foam on it, because that's the thing. Like I have my floor in here is like the cork floor, but or something. Yeah, no, this is cork. Sorry. I was like, is it bamboo? What is this? It's whatever. Anyway, if I stand on it, my back hurts, but I have the little foam mat, and then this thing has a foam cover on it. But that was the thing I was going to add is if you're very fidgety, I sit like, yeah, I sit like a goblin. I write a lot on the couch, and honestly, I laid down and put my laptop on my knees, which I don't know if that's good or bad, but I don't have a back problem, so maybe it's good. When I work out here, like, I do have this nice secondhand steel case chair that's got lumbar support and all that great stuff, and the desk is a convertible one, so I have the good chair if I'm sitting, like, you know, normal, and then if I am antsy, I can pop the desk up and use the fidgety board if I want. And actually, we just got this walk pad thing because you, Chana, you talked about yours, and it seemed nice, but it's on Kevin's desk. I feel like he gets to use it more than I do. But yeah, I move around a lot. Like, I feel like I don't always write in the same place, and frequently I'm like, this place is tapped out, I need to switch couches. Yeah, I don't know. And I think maybe that's part of it too, is like, a lot of the times that I've had back issues are where I'm sitting in a, like, ugh. I went through a period where I was working at Starbucks because, see previous question, my mother was watching my son, but he would not stop coming and bothering me. So I had to leave the house, and those wooden chairs, you're not supposed to sit in those for very long. That was horrible. So it is, I think there is a part there too, where if you're switching how you're sitting and where you're sitting, it might be gentler. But yeah, those are my suggestions.
Yeah.
Maybe just the reality of being gigantic is I never had the luxury of like moving around and being all stay. So I just sit. Yeah. But what I will say, and this isn't always possible, but I spent years buying cheap chairs that sucked and broke, and I finally bit the bullet and bought a nice one from the Secret Lab, and it's some of the best money I ever spent. Also, low-key, Trevor, you should slide my Secret Lab's affiliate link into
the description. Don't worry, it is in the description below right
now. Purely coincidental.
We weren't going that way. How did it get there? That's so weird.
Right, but I mean, it's, if you want to buy a nice chair, right? There you go.
Yeah.
And depending, for the record, depending where you live, if you look at like used stuff like Facebook Marketplace or like Craigslist or wherever, you will sometimes find offices getting rid of chairs because they're closing, and sometimes they're, you can get a pretty nice, like, this is the fun story. My husband doesn't like getting presents because he gets stressed about having stuff. So my family loves to give presents. So I said, he wants this nice steel case chair. Everybody chip in and we'll buy him this nice steel case chair. And so I had bought it and ordered it. And then he's like, cool, guess what? I found this steel case chair that I've been craving on Craigslist, and I'm going to go pick it up. And I was like, what if that was my chair then? So we both have the newer one. But like, that's where my chair came off of. This was some office's chair, and they didn't need it anymore. So you can get a good chair. And I mean, I completely agree with B-Dave. Like, it's worth paying for. But if you're like, that's nice, but I don't have that much, do look for a used one, because, you know, they're still pretty, there are surely crap ones out there, but there are also ones that out there that are good and solid and have more life in them.
Well, I think that is enough questions for today. Sean, thank you so much for joining us, taking time, doing the book club in this episode.
Thank you for having me. It's always so fun.
If people wanted to find you and what you do on the interwebs, where could they do so?
You can find me at shaunajermaine.com and at montycookgames.com. And pretty much if you search my name, I will pop up in 1,000 different places and surprise you.
Friends, what are some things you're working on? Where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter and sort of Blue Sky at Aaron M. Evans, or Instagram at all that you're in ease. You can find me on the Discord, of course. And once again, today is Tuesday. So tomorrow when this goes out, it will already be available. The Gift of Guthix is out now. So once again, my epic fantasy full of complicated friendships and more complicated villains, and the giant frog who thinks you're doing great, sweetie. that's not based on Point Break, is out. So you can explore RuneScape with me. Yay! Yay. Also, Relics of Ruin is obviously still out. So if you haven't gotten it yet, go get it. If you have gotten it and read it, please leave a review. And if you are in the Seattle area, on June 5th, I will be doing a reading with Django Wexler at Third Place Books, the one in Lake Forest Park. So I'll put that information on the socials. I just remembered I should start talking about it.
it is I, B. Dave Walters. B. Dave Walters on all the socials. Just a ton of appearances this year. So if you want to play some Dungeons and possibly additionally Dragons with me, I'm doing a lot. Also going to be at Gen Con, doing things, saying words. Just follow me on the socials.
You're going to be at Gen Con?
I am going to be at Gen Con. It's official. Yes. Together again.
Yay!
One of my happiest memories was seeing Aaron running up to me at full speed the first time we actually met in person. Great. Yeah. B. Dave Walters, Erwar. Yeah, and come hang out. Also, the most important things, Relics Ruin. Get the Guthix. You can have relics of Guthix. Or gift
I
of ruin.
I almost called it Relics of RuinScape the other day. Yeah. So.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
I'm gonna yield my time for those shout outs as well. Yeah, go get Relics of Ruin and Gift of Guthix. I'm also gonna give a shout out to Old Gods of Appalachia. Here's the thing. I dare you to go listen to that podcast and one, not get hooked, and two, not immediately want to play a horror RPG set in it. And I got good fucking news for you, because there's an awesome fucking TTRPG based on it that you can go get right now.
Well, the mountains of Appalachia are older than Saturn's rings.
Yes, so I know.
There's some weird shit out awesome. There. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, once again, Shauna, thank you so much for joining us. That is going to do it for this week's episode. Thank you all so much for joining us. If you enjoyed this episode, the best way to support it is by leaving a review on your podcast service of choice and telling your friends about the show. If you have any questions like the lovely people who wrote in tonight, and remember, we're getting low on those questions again, you can send those into writingaboutdragonsandshit@gmail.com. And if you'd like to keep up to date on the show, you can join our Discord with the link in the description below. But until next week, go write about some dragons and shit.
Moo.
Ha ha ha!